Hello, and welcome to the Big 5D Podcast. I'm Charles Laughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Big 5 Digital. I'm joined by Tahir Mullins. Tahir, how are you?
Hi, Charles. Good. It's great to be here. Lovely to be talking to you today.
Good. We're happy to have you. So you are with Savant Venture Fund. Tell me at any point if I'm framing anything incorrectly in terms of your title, name of your organization, anything like that. So you're an investor, to put it straightforwardly, and you're going to be a participant in our upcoming Big 5 Summit, which we're very grateful for. Thank you. And what you're going to be doing is organizing a group of startups and running a panel discussion around Fourth Industrial Revolution, Fourth IR. So I thought it would be interesting to have you on before the show to talk about what that is and why it's so important. So let's start at the beginning. Like I'm a five-year-old with only a couple of minutes, you know, explain what Fourth IR is.
Okay. So before we just do that, I just want to sort of say Savant is a deep tech science and engineering firm. We're a VC and an incubator. Been around for about 20 years as an incubator, enterprise support organization, startup advisor, with specifically looking at science and engineering type businesses. And for the last 5 years, we've been a VC, having deployed our first fund. So Fourth Industrial Revolution. Let's get to it very briefly. There's been a series of revolutions. These are technological sort of innovations that just really change the way industry functions. And then that has a sort of knock-on event of you know, how your economy transforms, how labor participates, how, you know, the Fourth Industrial Revolution has really changed a little bit more than just that, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, you know, the First Industrial Revolution, steam, water, mechanical production equipment, you know, that's where it starts, right? And that enables a lot more efficiencies. It allows for better production. It allows for people to now move via locomotives and those things. Then you start getting towards sort of division of labor. This is the Second Industrial Revolution with electricity and mass production, you know, and that then is another catalyst, right? And then after that, you get sort of like to the early 60s or late 60s rather, early 70s. Then you get your Third Industrial Revolution. Some will say it started in the 50s, you know, hey, we all have access to the internet now. And that's really, you know, everything that encompasses electronics, IT, automated production. People start talking about Moore's Law. So you fast forward to today, and everybody's talking about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And what is that? What does it mean? And it means a lot of different things to different people, because if you look back at any of these revolutions, people didn't know that they were revolutions or know to call them the fourth, the first, the third, or whatever until.
Right. That's more of a hindsight thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's more of an in hindsight thing.
Exactly. So people are sort of looking at things now and saying, what, you know, what is the Fourth Industrial Revolution? Nowadays, it encompasses AI and computer vision and all these things. And, you know, people were doing computer vision and AI at the beginning of this century. In the early 2000s, but people didn't quite say this is the Fourth Industrial Revolution, you know, but it is today, it's, you know, so it's come to be anything, the Internet of Things, AI, machine vision, robotics, you know, it's, for me, what it really boils down to is the blurring of the digital and physical realm, so where we exist now versus what we're doing online and the interconnectedness of that. I think for me, that is what the Fourth Industrial Revolution actually is. And it's not just manufacturing, you know, it goes everywhere to consumer technology. So it impacts the way we interact with the world around us, with each other, even, you know, over long distances. And then how we make our purchase decisions, you know, and how goods and products get to be produced, how they are actually managed as, you know, you get to that purchase decision as well, you know, and then how they are manufactured, how they are sourced. All of these things are now just being connected through technology. And so the fourth industrial revolution for me isn't just about industry, it's about everything else in between and beyond.
Okay, so a couple of things there. So is it fair to say this is the first industrial revolution we talk about while it's still going on? Is this the first industrial revolution that we're talking about while it is still happening, right? Because
That's a fair question. I wish I was around back then.
The first industrial revolution while it was happening. Fair point.
So I think when the first happened and the second happened, people probably didn't speak about it as much. But if you look at the third industrial revolution, I imagine that there would have been that because access to information, access to education is really picking up as a part of that revolution. So you have a lot of, there's a lot more academia going around as well. So the essence of like, where does fourth industrial revolution come from? I think it comes from some academic text where somebody said look back and said, this characterized this phase, this characterized that phase. It's the current phase is a little bit different than the phase before. Therefore, we'll call it a new phase. So that's my interpretation of, you know, how things play out. Even today, you know, and the fourth industrial revolution, I don't think today is even being defined as much by academics as it is people actively involved in the industry. You know, you've got VCs defining what it is. You've got startups defining what it is. You've got big corporations defining what it is. So for me, there's no owner to the title, but it's definitely interesting to see so many players identifying and sort of defining what it is as we're going through it, you know, and watching it evolve as well.
Okay. So let me put it this way. If a startup comes to you seeking investment, you know, wants to review their pitch deck with you or whatever your process is for reviewing a company that approaches you and they say, we're a fourth IR startup. I don't know if they say that, but let's say they do. Mm. If they were to say that, what does that mean to you? Or what do you think it means to you? What kind of company do you think you're about to look at?
If somebody says that to me, I sort of think, so what? Because there's so many. So what startups tend to do is they tend to say, these are the drivers of growth in the first industrial revolution, second, third, and then they'll come to the fourth. And then they'll sort of say, why in the fourth industrial revolution, their particular offering has found a sound footing, right? Mm-hmm. And then as a result of that, you know, they'll carry on with their pitch. To define a single business as playing within 4IR for me is, it doesn't work because it's, you know, if these days, if you've got a physical technology, you know, aspect to it, to your business, you know, if there's no IoT component to it, you know, it's very hard for us to really assess the real opportunity there, because these days the connectedness of devices and technologies is what's one of the primary drivers of value, you know, how well you can control your machinery, how well you can control the inputs and the outputs, and, you know, what kind of usage data you get from that gives us gives you insight into your customer behavior so you can augment and create new layers of concentric value so that you can really bolster and entrench yourself within, you know, your customer base. So for me, you know, with a startup founder says, hey, I'm a 4IR founder, I'm like, okay, I understand.
That sounds like sort of a cringy thing to say, but you invest in companies surprised. That you think of as 4IR, right?
Okay.
So when let's just turn that around. When you look at one company in your portfolio and you say that's a 4IR startup, what is the common feature to that startup?
Common feature, I would say, is that there's a physical asset or a physical product that's on the ground that is connected or monitored using some of the latest technologies to be an interface between what's happening on the ground and what's happening at the computation layer, which is either in the cloud or on-premise or whatever it is. So some people might have AI or some level of connected firmware embedded in into the products or assets that they put out and that they offer. And for me, that is how I would just characterize it. Is it a connected technology, basically? Is it a connected solution or a connected offering?
Okay.
So it's got to have a tie. It's got to have a tie back to the physical world.
Okay. And then the important feature, at least, of that connectedness is the data that can be seen essentially in real time, right? And talk about why that is such an important driver of this, if that's the right question.
It's an important driver because, I mean, people are building businesses around data. You know, as an example, if you go to a utilities provider, they are using data generated on the ground to determine how much they are going to bill you every month.
Right.
So if there's no data, they got to do estimates and, you know, you call it, reconcile at the end of the month, end of the week, end of the day, you know.
And versus, either they're overcharging or they're losing money or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And then also on the other side of things is when you yourself have that and you're monitoring that directly, you can check for leakages, you can check for power outages, you can check for suboptimal production. You know, I'm not scanning as many units coming out of this particular part of the factory. What's going on? Okay, you find out that, you know, the conveyor belt is maybe turning a little bit slower, or they're one staff member short, or they're taking too many breaks, and so you got to crack the whip. So the data is important because it helps drive efficiencies. We're getting hyper competitive now, and the more competitive you get, the more efficient you have to be on top of whatever value proposition it is that you're delivering. You know, so 4IR plays a big part of that.
So I want to move into a couple of things that we've talked about previously, one of which is that, well, actually, maybe it's a good place to start. If you could just give us a couple of examples, you can name the company or not name the company, doesn't matter to me, from your portfolio or from companies you're very closely familiar with, that you think typify this in Africa, and kind of describe what they do and why you think it's so interesting. Just a couple of examples.
I'll get a couple, so two, couple is two. So
understanding of a couple.
One is just, and I'm going to say this now just so you can remind me, one is with connected homes and the other one is with medical diagnostics.
Okay.
So I'll start with connected homes. So we've got a company in the portfolio, as an example, called Sensor Networks. And that company has the ability to say what's happening with your geyser. That's your hot water cylinder, if you're not from South Africa. So what's happening with your hot water cylinder when you're not around? So if there's an electrical surge, if there's a leak, it automatically detects that, right? It automatically shuts down electricity and water flows to that particular unit, automatically notifies your insurer, automatically allocates a plumber, and you get a phone call from the plumber saying, listen, there's been an incident, I'm on my way, you know.
So that's a real IoT play, right?
IoT, fourth industrial revolution, in my view. You know, really transforming the way people do business, you know. Plumbers not having to fill out as many paperwork, insurers, you know, very easily just being able to manage the process. You as the end customer knowing, you know, that you don't have to worry about your goods being damaged, filing out too much paperwork as a result. And, you know, but on top of that, what they're also able to do is, because it's a connected technology, they've got a platform where they can actually measure how much energy is being consumed, how hot your geyser is. So you can actually put it on a schedule. So in South Africa, we've got load shedding as an example.
Right.
We don't know when the power is going to go out. Actually, we do. Mm-hmm. Our government is pretty good at telling us when the power is going to go out. But so there are these schedules that people are on. And you want to come home and you want to have hot water, right? So you don't want this thing to be off. So this thing is actually timed to you can set it to automatically respond to load shedding to be able to heat your geyser up to a particular temperature so that when you hit a certain stage of load shedding, you can still have warm water, right?
So that's what makes this compelling in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
Is that what makes it? That's the selling proposition of this, I would imagine, or a strong
one. And it's not just in South Africa. You know, you've got load shedding. We're just very vocal. We like to advertise.
Right. Everyone hears about it in South Africa, right?
Yeah, but it's a much bigger problem than just South Africa, right?
Okay, no, fair enough. It's about having what you need when the power goes off. It's
exactly
that's one part of it. That's one part of it.
Another part,
using it more efficiently, and then having the maintenance sort of. It keeps the thing from breaking down because the maintenance schedule is being maintained.
But let's not forget about cost savings that you come about as a result. So you can manage when and how. And so your energy costs.
It's cheaper to clean it on time than to repair it or replace it, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever the process would be, the comparable process. Okay, that's really interesting. Now you mentioned medical diagnostics. Tell us about that one.
Cool. So we've got a company in the portfolio called AI Diagnostics. Right. And this one is very interesting because it also speaks to, so Sensor Networks at the moment was speaking to an infrastructure play, an infrastructure gap, a problem that we have, let's rather put it that way. AI diagnostics speaks to both infrastructure and a distribution of skills issue that we have on this continent. Right. Mm-hmm. So there are only so many radiologists. If you are in an urban hub, and this is true for South Africa, but also outside of South Africa on this continent. If you're in an urban hub and you're receiving private healthcare, you're probably going to have access to a radiologist when you need it. The people who diagnose tuberculosis, those specialists, all of those things when you need it, right? Problem is if you're in public or if you're in a rural area or in a more underdeveloped market in general, you're not going to have as many highly skilled specialists who are able to help with diagnosis and those sorts of things, right? And you're also not going to have maybe the lab infrastructure to do high volumes of testing of cultures and things for diagnosis. So AI diagnostics is very interesting because they've got a stethoscope, right? And they've used AI to listen in on what's happening as you breathe to determine whether or not you've actually got tuberculosis and whether you should be referred for treatment, or for further diagnosis, whatever the case is. So what that actually does is in certain areas where people don't have access to that and they've got to wait every 3 weeks to a month or they've got to travel to the big city or whatever the case is to be able to get an assessment, And traveling just is just an it's a non-starter in some of these areas. It becomes it becomes a life-threatening scenario. But if you've got a stethoscope that anybody in a clinic can just put on your chest and you breathe into, and that immediately tells you whether you've got a situation or not, now you've got life-saving technology as a result of the fourth industrial revolution that addresses a critical infrastructure and skills gap on the continent.
So in this scenario, instead of building a hospital in a rural area, you just need some place where somebody can go where there's a few instruments, right?
Thank you.
It's connected.
Exactly. So what you're actually going to see, so you'll see 4IR now starting to shape industries, right? So you will start seeing I've spoken to a few founders now in South Africa and across the continent who are actually using connected technologies to assist people because of this infrastructure play. And so now what you're starting to see is a new sort of level of innovation around how people set up private care, how people also set up public care. Okay. So now you can have multiple centers of excellence based on connected technologies that can now service.
So it really scales access to healthcare in underserved areas, essentially, or has the potential to, at least, right?
Exactly.
Okay. That's really interesting. Okay. So you've sort of been answering this question all along in these two examples, but I want you to sort of summarize it a little bit as we wrap up. Why is Fourth IR, and to be honest, my takeaway from this conversation is that the term Fourth IR is a little, almost too broad for what you're describing, but you know, you can correct me there. But let's talk about something we have talked about off camera a few times, which is why is this so important for the continent? Because you've sort of given a great example just now with diagnostics and a pretty good example with the geezers. but kind of wrap up why you're so excited about this for the continent, for all the challenges the continent has.
It's precisely because of the challenges, right? It's something that's needed, right? There's a lot of need on this continent, and it's not being addressed. And 4IR literally gives us the ability to do so, to address needs. The other thing that's quite interesting is that 4IR, so as an example, there are companies now telling suppliers, telling retailers and the suppliers exactly what's on the shelf, what's off the shelf right now, and what's been moved around the store, what's left the store, what's been purchased, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. So what that does is it actually enables suppliers to say, okay, this is moving really fast. We're running out now. The shipment from China is only coming in so many days. But we've also got a reasonable level of local manufacturing capacity, which may not be as competitive as what we've seen overseas, but it allows us to at least fulfill some level of order now. So we can keep manufacturing. So one of the things that 4IR is also addressing is the ability to build local manufacturing capacity. Sure, it may not be at the same level as what China's doing, you know, other countries in the East, but you're now starting
to fill these supply gaps, for example, right?
Exactly. We're starting to build industries now, and that's what's really exciting about 4IR. So having being able to say, well, AI says this is happening in the macro, so we need to stock up on this. In this land of opportunity, so it allows you to just execute better, faster, more efficiently. In some cases, retailers, you know, origin is number two. So that's origin, that's source of goods sold. But reliability of supply is number one. So, if you have fast fashion is a nice example of that, you know?
Okay.
So you look at, Mr. Price, who's been really committing, I think it was Mr. Price, to local manufacturing of attire. They committed to fast fashion, and they can't wait for the season to be over and then things arrive and we're way too delayed. They see what's happening. They see what really works. And they've got this local supply chain that just executes on that, you know.
Okay.
And they can see what's moving in real time based on the technologies that they've implemented, you know. So,
okay. So what sounds like, what's kind of interesting about this is not just the startups that, you know, whether it's diagnostics or manufacturing or whatever it is, that it's the spin-off businesses that sort of are created as a result. That's what seems really interesting about a lot of this.
Yeah. So, it's spin-off businesses, sensor networks again, right? Started off with a plumbing network. That plumbing network exploded because all of the people working for these various plumbers said, wow, I can actually just build a business just working with sensor networks. And so created new sort of plumbing companies, whatever those types of firms are called. And so, it's been an enabler of that, you know, like you have all these spin-off companies just growing and right. going.
Because the original company is creating a new, I don't want to say new industry because that's a bit much, but like the healthcare example was creating a new way to create infrastructure to address.
I think it's about growing right. industry, right? It's about growing industry, and every new type of offering that gets brought to the table has a knock-on effect, you know, right. Especially when you're growing industries. So you don't just grow the healthcare people. Now there's more services required in those areas to be able to clean, to be able mm-hmm. to manage the infrastructure, to be able to, you know, so now you've got more opportunities coming up because people can more affordably pop up new centers of excellence, you know, to serve particular mm-hmm. areas. So there's a lot that happens around 4IR, and that's, I think, the beauty of it and why I actually love the idea of investing in that for this continent, because you can invest now because of the gaps and have exponential returns because there's just an open playing field. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can't ignore the impact that you create as a result of these companies doing phenomenally well on the continent.
Okay, that's a really excellent point to end it on, yet I still have one more question. and a little bit kind of panning back, we've, you know, you're an investor in Africa, and, you know, last year was, you know, kind of a pullback year in terms of businesses getting funded and so on and so forth. Fourth IR notwithstanding, what do you think this year looks like, just as if I'm a founder in Africa? Pessimistic, optimistic? How should I reorient how I think if I think I'm going to need to raise money this year?
Is this in or beyond 4IR?
Just beyond. You know, that's just broadly speaking.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, that's a very interesting one. We have debates about this all the time within sort of the VC community. My opinion, what I've seen from speaking to people, is that the last 2 years, there was a lot of caution that started creeping in, which accelerated last year into the deal-making process. And a lot of investors actually hung back to say, okay, let's see what happens with the market, or let's be a little bit more cautious about where we put our capital. Let's also see what happens in the portfolio. Do companies need additional bridging capital to be able to make it through the funding winter and that sort of thing? And what's happened is there's actually just been a buildup of like an excess of dry powder. So that's money that needs to be spent, but that hasn't been spent by a fund manager. Right. Fund managers are on the clock. The day you close your fund, you're on the clock with a deployment period, right? And if you haven't really been deploying over the last 2 years, you know, and your fund was already 2 years in, you've got 1 year left. So fund managers are now under quite a bit of pressure, and the price is right now, you know, so
valuations are no longer as,
exactly
rich.
So I think if you're a founder raising now and you research your VC well, you might actually be able to raise quite well, but it really does depend on who you're speaking to and what your offering is and how it aligns with what they're doing, right? So if you track your VCs and you see who started raising or who announced their funds 2 to 3 years ago, you know, and how many deals they've announced, then you'll have a pretty good idea of who you should go to, who's going to be under pressure. Yeah. Exactly. So I think it depends. A lot of startups, you know, are probably going to struggle. Everybody's still going to be increasingly looking for traction and high, really good sort of positive unit economics and high performance data before they invest in companies. But I think we're going to see a high volume of capital being deployed from.
Right. So the stage at which your business needs to be in order to effectively raise, that bar has been raised a little bit over the last couple of years. Is that fair to say?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody's looking. There are very few people or VCs still investing without commercial markers?
Because there's no idea investing anymore, right?
Well, there is, but you know, I would say that bucket has shrunk. Right. And people are a bit more cautious about that particular bucket. Let me put it that way, because you really need things to perform right now, right? So,
okay, all right, okay. So we're going to hear a lot more from you about all of these things at the conference, and we're really excited about that. And really, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. Here, appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to see what happens at the Big Five Summit, Big Five Digital Summit. Last year was quite interesting. I loved the fact that there was lots of senior leadership from corporate showing up and actually participating, not just showing up. You know, that was great.
That's the important difference, right? Yeah.
So definitely looking forward to it and hoping to share more and learn more at the conference. So.
All right, great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Charles.
Thanks for joining the Big 5D Podcast Summit Speaker Series, featuring conversations about issues important to SMEs in Africa with the thought leaders slated to appear at the 2024 Big 5 Summit in Cape Town. This episode was brought to you by the Big 5 Summit, Africa's leading small business technology event, which takes place 19-20 March in Cape Town. To get involved with this event, please write to us at info@big5digital.org. This podcast is a production of Big 5 Digital and is hosted and produced by me, Charles Laughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Big 5 Digital. Thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for more great episodes.